Guest today is Mark O'Connor. Mark has released a phenomenal solo guitar album, Markology 2. We're going to get into everything behind it, dedicated to Tony Rice. There's so much to get into with Mark. Thanks so much for tuning in. To the listeners of Unreal Bluegrass, I'm so happy to have as a guest for the first time on Unreal Bluegrass, Mark O'Connor. Thank you, Mark, for being on the show.
And thanks so much, Steve, for having me. Thanks for playing a tune from my new guitar album there, a real exploration on a theme. You know, it's like bluegrass and jazz meets classical.
Exactly. So,
like, the approach is just really pretty comprehensive. I quote the melody here and there, but it's definitely a development. You know, it's an exploration of that little tune, which we've heard a million times. So I thought, you know, why repeat the thing? You know.
Yeah, yeah. There are Markology 2. It's two because there was one in 1978 that you called Markology. There's we talking off the air about what do you have 46 albums. I guess, over that career that you have that is still going strong. So Markology 2 echoes back to Markology, which was recorded in 1978. So the album that we're talking about, we're going to talk about other things also, it was released in April 2021. It's on Rounder Records. And there are 10 cuts, and unlike anything else I think that you've done before, Mark, this is you and a guitar.
Yeah, it's partially the pandemic is responsible for this this project. I was actually putting together guitar pieces one by one, arranging them, coming up with new ideas, new ways to play the flat pick steel string guitar. And this was really born out of a 20-year drought where I never picked up the instrument. I'd quit guitar altogether and mandolin back in 97.
And you can explain that. Are you okay explaining what happened in that interim?
Yeah, so I had this really bad case of bursitis in the right elbow. And the doctors were saying, you know, you got to lay off of some of this stuff or you won't be able to work. You won't be able to use your arm. And I just went into this mode of trying to save at least one instrument. And I chose the fiddle. I thought if I, you know, discontinue the guitar and the mandolin, that will free up my arms some from practice and rehearsal and so forth. And I put a lot of pressure on my arms to do all of that. And, you know, I was probably, you know, playing through the pain like you're not supposed to.
Right.
But I never returned to the instruments because I thought, you know, I'll leave well enough alone. I don't really need to play the plectrum instruments anymore because I have a full career with the violin and my compositions. I was composing nonstop. I was composing for orchestra and chamber music, lots of things going on. So I didn't really miss it until I had this idea of putting together my family in a band setting. My wife, Maggie, my son, Forrest O'Connor, who was returning from college to play mandolin full time and sing and write songs, and his wife, Kate. And all of a sudden, we were in a band with three fiddles. And that was pretty cool for a lot of songs. But after a year or two, I was thinking, man, it'd be nice to have a little bit of variety. I wish I was that multi-instrumentalist I used to be because it could really come in handy right now. And my family encouraged me to try one song on the guitar, just, you know, like a real easygoing thing. I didn't even take a solo in it the first couple of times out. I just played rhythm. And that's how it started. That was only in 2017. So some of the first cuts on Markology 2 were from just a year after that, 2018 and 19. And I was just kind of documenting my progress, my journey back to the old Martin Herringbone guitar. And then at some point, I was going to be a guitar player in the band for beyond one song. In fact, I worked my guitar playing up to the point where I started playing Slopes again, which was my jam tune that I composed with Bela Fleck for Strength in Numbers. And so I needed a new guitar because I had gotten rid of all my old ones, except for my Martin Herringbone, but I didn't want to take that out of the road. And so I got a new guitar made for me, and they made it in the image of my old Martin Herringbone. A Colorado guitar company made it, John Baxendale. Fantastic guitar. And that inspired me. The old Martin did, then the new guitar did, and then I kept coming up with tunes and arrangements, and eventually this album.
So then that I saw you in, I have to think it's 2019 at Grey Fox with that family band, and you didn't know it, but I was standing 20 mm-hmm. feet to your side. As they let me roam. I tell people, I don't know why they do it, but the Grey Fox people just let me roam around, do what I want, and talk to whoever I want. So you had the guitar then as part of the band.
Yes.
Okay, yeah, that's right. So that's an interesting way to get back into playing. So I assume then as you got back into this guitar playing mode, and you play with a lot of power. Now, that doesn't mean necessarily to me that you're using a lot of power with your right hand, and as I listen to this album, everything is so clean, which doesn't denote power at all. But so you weren't experiencing any pain, and you mentioned something about the pandemic. I guess that gave you more time to, you weren't performing anywhere, or nobody was. So I guess what did that give you more time to? A lot of these recordings for Markology 2 were done, it looks like, from what I see, in kind of a home studio setting.
That's right. So I had about five cuts before the pandemic hit, and I wasn't planning on making an album. I was just documenting each arrangement that I came up with. When I felt like I had it pretty much together, I put the mics up and recorded it, and then moved on to another one. And then the pandemic hit, and then I kept doing it. I had more time to spend with it. And it wasn't really about tune number 9 when Tony Rice died.
Yeah.
And it just hit me so hard because he was my childhood hero and then mentor. By the time I was 16, he helped me on my original Markology album. He played rhythm guitar for me on a lot of those cuts, and then he played some lead as well on Fluid Drive, and then he helped me mix it, and he became like a big brother. And then of course when just a few years later we were playing together in various settings here and there, and of course we were really quite well known for that major set we did at Merlefest near the beginning of the festival, and that's on video all over YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
But when my return to guitar was interesting because I was drawn back to the Dreadnought sound, for all practical purposes, the bluegrass sound. And I just loved Tony's sound and approach, and I went back to kind of being like childlike again, rediscovering what it was about the guitar that made me want to play and take it as far as I was able to. And it was a necessary kind of reinvention for me. I dove way back into my psyche. There was some guitar musical language that had been happening over those 20 years, and they all started to pour out of the guitar. So I went back in that mode when I was a teenager. I put heavy gauge strings on because when I played with David Grisman Quintet, when I replaced Tony Rice in that group because he didn't want to continue under the conditions that David was laying out for the band.
I understand.
Tony opted out, and I came in. It's quite a weird story, and it's actually going to be in my book. I'm writing an autobiography.
Okay.
Because actually I was in Tony Rice's group at the very same time playing the fiddle. So both of those guys were hiring me for different instruments. And they were competing against each other. And it was a showdown in in Marin County, California. So ultimately I ended up with David, because he had a big recording contract, and those tours with Stefan Grappelli, who became my mentor.
What a great opportunity.
I know. That was
incredible.
Yeah.
Stretching all the way back to the days of Django, and then, and having that contact, and plus he's just was such a great. Joe Venuti. There's a couple that were like him, but I think Stefan Grappelli just. By the way, if you're just tuning in, I'm talking over at this point over Mark O'Connor, but Mark O'Connor is my guest on Unreal Bluegrass, and we're a jumping off point is his new album released in April 2021, the date I have of Markology 2, and I knew that you traveled with and worked with Stefan Grappelli, but I can't let that pass and not bring up the what an incredible thing that must have been for you to be able to play with that gentleman. I mean, he spanned everything. He was just an amazing from the old swing, the gypsy, what they call it, gypsy jazz. But I mean, certainly, wow, what a great opportunity that must have been.
It was, and we took full advantage of it. He became a mentor and teacher during those tours, and I really benefited from that. So when I was playing with Grisman back then, I was using heavy gauge strings. Years later, by the time I got to Nashville, I went back down to mediums, like every other Nashville guitar player. Mm-hmm. And wimped out with the rest of them. And then when I returned to the guitar, I had it in my mind that I was revisiting this thing when I was a teenager. And I used heavy gauge with Grisman. I wanted to get that really big tone.
Yeah.
I think it was the sound of the dreadnought that really inspired me back to want to really concentrate on the guitar. And then I got this new guitar, and it was able to take heavy gauge strings, because I told the maker, I said, I want to be able to put heavy gauge on it, because a lot of guitar makers will go, no, don't do it. You're gonna bow the top of it out. And certainly, this guitar is doing that a little bit, but man, it is a big sound.
Can I ask you this? Because heavy, light, medium, they mean different things, but for Mark O'Connor, what's the gauge? Can you go down the gauge of the strings so we know what you're talking about? I'm sure they're pretty heavy.
Yeah, sure. So my high E string is a 14, and then it goes down to the low E string at a 59.
Hmm. 59?
And I'm using a 59.
Oh, man.
And I'm using a big, thick, one of those blue chip picks.
Yeah.
So I'm putting in a lot of volume, a lot of power. The reason why I can play now, and I was not able to play, 25 years ago, because I've been playing the guitar now for 5 years again, is because it really is about practice regimens. Like as soon as I feel a twinge of pain in now either arm, I've got bursitis. I still have bursitis. It's both in the right arm and the left arm now, so I got to mind the ship on both sides. But it's when I'm practicing or rehearsing and I feel a little bit of pain, a twinge of pain, I have to immediately stop. Mm. That's the discipline that it took. And I did not have that discipline. A lot of younger players will never have that kind of discipline. And that's why a lot of people are getting injured. But I realized that when you're performing and you're putting everything into your performance, usually you don't get injured on stage. It's really about practice habits, and of course we all need to practice, so it really is frustrating, but I've been able to work through it.
I'll tell you what, for the gauge that you're talking about playing and for the guitar that you're playing, the tone, you talk about the separation, the tone, the cleanness, and the power. There is a lot of power, and I don't know what that means coming through a guitar player's hand. I know everything is clean. I know your left hand is like a vice, and I know that the strings are so clean and separate on your right hand, but do you consider yourself to be a hard player, a powerful player when you come to these tunes on that guitar?
Yeah, it's really loud. I had to play loud with Grisman's band just to stay up with those two mandolins. Grissom is probably one of the loudest mandolin players ever, the earth ever produced. And then he's got, of course, the best mandolins that I've ever heard. So just for the guitar to stay up with both both David and Mike Marshall on the second mandolin, man, I had to put out everything I had. That was back when I was 17 and 18 years old. So that was part of my formative training and years put in. So to return to it, I just kind of picked up where I left off. Matter of fact, you'll find this pretty interesting. We played our first show. I play duo concerts now with my wife, Maggie. And we play a lot of double fiddle stuff. I play guitar in the show and mandolin. And I've got some solo guitar pieces. And our first show was last weekend out of this pandemic lockdown. And we played at a brand new hall at Belmont University in Nashville, Tennessee. It is stunning. It's like almost a $200 million performing arts center. It's got 1,700 seats. So it's just a stunning piece of work. And they wanted us to play completely acoustically. We were the first act in this place. It was an invited audience. The maker, the designers, the acousticians of the hall were in the audience. They wanted to show off the acoustics of their new hall, and they did not want us to use a PA. So I said, fine, you know, the violins, I mean, they're going to carry in a hall like that. That's no problem. And I'm thinking, I wonder if I can pull off a guitar, because I've never done that. In a big hall like that without a microphone, without a PA. And I did, and it really read out there. People were saying, you know, they could hear every note. So I'm able to play at a volume where I can get on a stage like that and project the guitar out into the auditorium. So I'm going to do that again this weekend. We're going to play at Emory University at Schwartz Performing Arts Center at Emory University in Atlanta, Georgia.
And that'll be unmiked.
And that will be unmiked, too.
Wow.
We're not going to do that every time. It depends on the quality of the hall.
Right.
These performing arts centers, some of them are just gorgeous. So we can pull it off. We definitely can pull it off with the violins, and it sounds just great. But I'd be able to add guitar to that mix without a mic is... is pretty cool. That's something that's new. I mean, I'm, you know, like, as long as I've been playing music, and it's been a long time, you know, 45, 50 years out there on the road, there's always something new around the corner. And this, you know, this Markology 2 album is completely new. It's a new concept. I mean, a solo unaccompanied guitar album with a flat pick and steel strings guitar with no accompaniment. I mean, that is very rare.
It's rare. And Mark, there's a lot of information. There's a lot of musical information that you impart as you go through these tunes. And I love the clarity of it. You've captured that description so well. It's so clean. The notes are so clean. Everything is so just pops off of the recording. And you make gorgeous choices. For me, you make gorgeous choices of the notes that you're playing. Because there are six public domain tunes on here that are just, the arrangements are just remarkable. And then we're going to talk about some of the tunes that you wrote for it. But this is, in my opinion, the sound. If I just wanted to say, if you want to hear something that has really great sound, let's forget what kind of music you might, let's say you're a guitar fan, listen to Markology 2, because the recording itself is so crystal clear. And then it's still amazing to me that you did so many of these tunes. It was in a home setting. I know that the very last tune, which I want to get to at the end of this discussion, Ease with the Breeze, I think, from when the video, Mark, was done in a church.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There were three tunes that I did in a local church, and that was before the pandemic hit. And I just wanted to capture mainly the sound of that beautiful old Martin Herringbone I have from 1945. It's the one that I used on my first Markology album.
Okay.
I got it when I was 14 years old, and it's just you know, just the love of a guitar, man. It's so amazing. It's one of the great Herringbones ever. It's got such a range of color and texture this guitar. It can sound bluegrassy. It can sound contemporary. And so I wanted to show off the acoustics of that, and I chose that church to do it. But when the pandemic hit, I was stuck at home.
Yeah.
And so I had a great microphone, my microphone that I've used all these years. Since 1988, I got it, and I started using it on my album Elysian Forest, and then the following year, 89, used on Strength in Numbers, and then used it pretty much on most of my albums over the years. And I have that microphone right here, and I stuck that microphone in front of the guitar about foot away from it.
Yeah, it's not too far. I've seen the videos. And by the way, if people listening, you want to get the album, listen to it. But if you want to see it, the performance, there's a lot of things on YouTube that you've made available.
Actually, every single cut.
Oh, is that right?
On this album was filmed.
Okay. All
so
right.
They're all on video and on my YouTube channel. You can go to markoconnor.com and go to the Markology page. And there, all the videos are arranged right there from YouTube.
Well, I interrupted you. You were talking about the placement of the microphone. So go back to that page.
Well, it's an incredible mic. But I'll have to say there's a couple of cuts on here where I'm just using two stage mics. And I kind of wanted to try it just to mix up the sound a little bit. And I was telling Fleck about this. Baylor wrote the liner notes, just some stunning liner notes for this album.
Yeah.
He went through my entire history of guitar playing on it. I couldn't believe it. I was thinking, you know, since he's a pretty busy guy, I thought maybe he'll give me three paragraphs, and it turns out really comprehensive liner notes. There's so many that I had to do a triple, fold-out page. I had to actually do a booklet for the CD. I wasn't going to do a booklet, and then Bayless liner notes came in. I went, oh, my gosh, okay. Get out the printing. I mean, we got to fire it up.
I don't think Bayless short arms anything, Mark. I think you know that by now. He did a wonderful job of writing those liner notes. I didn't know that he'd taken that much all the way back. I guess I haven't read all of them yet. I have the full booklet that you're talking about. But
And I've got it on a blog, too. It's his liner notes are on a blog. But I was telling Bela, because he was really playing a lot about the sound, and I said, this is gonna blow your mind. Two cuts on this album were through stage mics, these ear trumpets that you see a lot.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, Del McCurry band uses the ear trumpets, and other groups do.
They're very popular.
Yeah, they're very popular, and sound really good, and when I told Bela that two of the mics, two of the tunes were used with stage mics, that just blew his mind, because he was thinking the best mic in the world, and I might have that C24 of mine might be one of the greats that I could have ever had for my instruments. But there's something about this guitar and the heavy gauge strings and the pick and the vibe of it, and I don't know, it's just reading through the microphones. But you mentioned the six TD tunes. My return to guitar, I really wanted to see what was up with my musical language. And what I was wondering was if I don't know how many times a professional musician has discontinued a principal instrument, quit for 20 years, and then picked it up again professionally.
Yeah.
I don't know how many times that has happened. Probably almost, probably
not
rare.
Not many.
So what I was kind of playing a few little mind tricks with myself. Am I going to pick up where I left off 20 years before as a guitar player, or am I going to start, once I get my calluses and technique back, and it was frustrating at first, let me say, because I could barely play 10 minutes without my hands hurting. It was going to take a few months to get my calluses back, get my right arm back again for flat picking, just the motion of it. But after about 2 or 3 months, it felt like, man, I was back. I was almost back. And then I realized that I was playing differently than when I left off. back in 97.
Describe how. What did you see? What were you doing differently from when you left off?
Everything seemed to be different. Even though I was playing the Smart and Herringbone, I was playing it differently. I had different, you know, ideas for tunes. And that's why there's so many traditional tunes on this album, because I wanted to demonstrate the fact that I'm not just playing Beaumont Rag like I used to, or I'm not just playing Alabama Jubilee like I used to. This is like a whole new thing. And I didn't want to hide that fact behind a new composition, because sometimes you can put a lot into your compositions.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the composition itself is the departure, not necessarily your playing,
yeah,
your technique, or your sound.
Yeah, that makes good
because
sense.
Your mind kind of just goes off to, oh, this is a new composition, and it sounds very different. So I wanted to play some at least familiar things that I've played before to demonstrate that the fact that I must have been carrying around these ideas musically way in the back of my mind by never thinking that I would have any use for them. And this was really an interesting journey into the kind of the psyche of a musician where we must collect musical ideas and thoughts. And if we're not really using them right now, we store them.
They wait for you.
They wait. And maybe these ideas for the guitar would have never seen the light of day if I hadn't returned to the guitar, which was my plan. We mentioned that Bela doesn't like to do things halfway. Well, same here. You know, like I didn't want to be an amateur guitar player.
I had that feeling.
Around, you know, like just strumming on my couch. Like I'd rather not play at all and just concentrate on my fiddle. You know?
Yeah. Well, I think let's do this, Mark. This would be a good opportunity to have you introduce the next cut we're going to hear from Markology 2, which is Beaumont Rag, again, a public domain tune. I want you to tell the audience about it. We're going to play that tune for them, and then I want to come back and talk to you about the biography, about your instructional stuff, and where people can find you. So if you wouldn't mind, Mark O'Connor, give me a little bit of an intro to Beaumont Rag, which is off of this Markology 2 album.
Yeah, absolutely. This is the very first cut that I recorded from my return to the guitar. And so this is probably a year, literally, like within a year after I picked the guitar back up after the layoff of 20 years. And I kind of wanted to put the mics in front of the guitar and just kind of absorb what I was going through, this transition back to the guitar. And I was playing in a new way that I had never played quite like that before. And I realized that some of the guitar influences were with people over the last 20 years that I was actually working with, including Frank Mignola from my Hot Swing group.
Yeah, sure.
And we were on the road for, you know, 10, 12 years. And I just loved Frank's guitar playing, but it was out at the time where I was not playing guitar at all. And so I must have been storing up some ideas I was getting from Frank, or, you know, some kind of inspiration. And then when I returned to the guitar, my Beaumont Rag kind of gets into this bluegrass / jazz place.
Yeah.
Where you can see some of that Django Reinhardt and my contemporary Frank Mignola seeping into that arrangement. I also played a lot with Julian Lage in my Hot Swing group.
Yeah, he's doing okay.
Yeah, he's doing great. And and he was a big, his sound and his guitar approach was in my ear. And likewise, I didn't think I was going to do anything with it.
Yeah.
But here's Beaumont Rag with some new influences.
Yeah, it's great. All right, let's listen to this. I'll be right back with Mark O'Connor, and we're going to talk a little bit more, but now Beaumont Rag, great introduction by Mark. All right, to the audience, you just heard Beaumont Rag. Back with Mark O'Connor. Mark, we've talked about Markology 2. There's so many great, we could play every tune with a special introduction from you, but I want to touch on a couple of things. We're going to come back and play one more cut as you're leaving, but I caught note that you were working on a biography. You mentioned it early on in our discussion, so tell me a little bit about the biography you're working on.
Well, my autobiography is something that's been kind of lingering out there. I had two starts on it with two other writers, beginning as long ago as 8 years. And I scrapped each one. We did a lot of work on each time, but I was still wanting to make sure that my voice was in these words. It's such a personal story, and half of really the story of this book is my childhood, because I'm a musician and all the things that that I am a child musician, I think will be really interesting to the readers. And so I really want, and I've been very busy doing music, and I thought having a co-writer would help, but I felt like I just didn't have enough time. So when the pandemic was raging, I decided January 1st of this last year, this 2021, that I would write every day and start again, start from page one, with that background of having two stabs at it before. And I'm still writing in my ninth month, and I'm almost done. And I'm very excited about it.
Great.
It's going to be quite a story of an acoustic musician out there with all the different experiences that I've run into and how I progressed. The story really is about the fiddle, taking the fiddle as far as I possibly could.
When that autobiography comes out, Mark, I'm gonna try to tie you to this now, and I hopefully you're so you can never come back to Unreal Bluegrass. But when the autobiography comes out that you're working on, whenever, I'm gonna get it, and I'm gonna read it, and I'm gonna maybe ask you to come back on Unreal Blue, unless you're just too busy.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm excited for that. I want people to know about where you have a website, and which I assume that I find Markology 2 and all the other musical recordings that you've done. There's a lot of them there. You want to tell them where they find Markology? I'm going to speak to you a little bit more.
Yeah. So, yeah, go to markoconnor.com, and there's a whole page dedicated to this album, Markology 2, with lots of press articles, quotes, pictures, and videos, and the liner notes, and so forth. I also have a website that features all of my releases on my label OMAC Records. That's omacrecords.com.
Okay.
And you can check out all kinds of my releases there. And then my educational stuff, the O'Connor Method for strings, that's the oconnormethod.com. And that's a method to learn how to play the violin or the fiddle using American music and creativity and all the rich diversity American music has.
I've seen enough of that, Mark, to know you have a real passion for getting that point across of using American music and inspiring people to play, just from what I've seen. I think that's another part of your heart, the music, and now you have the opportunity to write this autobiography, and the guitar coming back is phenomenal, but you have a special place for that instructional material.
It is. It was really important for me to not only see children attempt to learn how to play, but not to quit, like so many children do. And so I always thought that there must be a better way to involve them in music, and I feel like there's no better way than American music, especially for the beginning and intermediate years of being a student. You know, once you're an advanced player, you have many choices. You can go in a myriad of directions, and then you're steering the ship. That's not an issue as far as musical education. You can always find what you're looking for once you're an advanced player. It really is that beginning and intermediate level where I felt like I could really inspire with my materials inspire a lot of kids out there all over the world, not just in the U.S.
Yeah, I can tell it's something you're very devoted to on, and I appreciate that. I like the fact that you do devote that much time, and it's a genuine passion that you have. On Markology 2, there are three tunes that you've written for this. We've talked a little bit about all the public domain tunes. I want you, there's three tunes written for this album. All three of them, to me, are just gems. Flailing, Kamala Boogie, and Ease with the Breeze. Those are tunes that I think those are the originals that you wrote for this album. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah, and I typically compose more original music for my albums, but just to bring back what I said earlier in the program, I really wanted my guitar reentry to be about the actual technique, guitar playing, style, sound. And I thought, you know, it was a great vehicle to do that on more familiar themes. And in my mind, it was kind of like proof that I was returning as a new type of guitar player, that I wasn't just rehashing old stuff, where I wasn't using this as a vehicle just for composition, which I easily could have,
mm-hmm.
and then the composition would focus the listener on, you know, the differences between my era of guitar playing now and before. I really wanted to make it more about what I was doing with familiar material.
Did you put the three originals at the end on purpose?
You know, it just turned out to be that way. It's kind of,
I don't know if you're trying to indicate a journey has come to this point back on your guitar, or I could be reading too much into it, which I often do.
It's interesting because for many years now, I've been including a lot of classics in my performances, especially with the O'Connor method. I have so many American classics now that I've worked up for one fiddle or two fiddles with Maggie. And some of that stuff is just gorgeous. But I end up usually concluding my concerts with a lot of original material. It's a little kind of upside down, like you would think, where you would, most people, when they think they're going to put the original material up front and then end strong with some recognized material.
That's right. Yeah, that's right.
And I flip that around a lot because I put a lot of value into my creative compositions, and I feel like they showcase me more completely about who I am as a musician, where the classics I feel like are more about that specific musical language, and I'm kind of diving into this area or genre to bring that to the forefront. It's like part of me, where I feel like celebrating at the end of a project about like what it is that makes me tick as a musician.
It's kind of like you're with me this so far. Okay, we've done seven tunes so far. Now let's take one more step with me if you're feeling comfortable, and then that gets us right to the last three. I want you to. They're all I'm crazy about. I would have played all three of those given the opportunity, and they will pop up somewhere within the programming in the future, or maybe even on this event. But Flailing, the Kamala Boogie, which is the ninth tune. I want you, and I love this tune, Ease with the Breeze. This is one we talked about early with Mark O'Connor about recording this in the church. I want you to set up and then introduce Ease with the Breeze, and then I've taken enough of your time, and I'll let you go after that. So talk a little bit about Ease with the Breeze. We'll introduce that one, set it up, and play it, and then I will bid you adieu and thank you so much for your time.
Well, thank you so much. Ease with the Breeze is an old tune of mine, and I recorded it originally on my On the Rampage album when I was 17. And on the original cut, I had Tony Rice play with me on it. And so when I returned to the guitar after that 20-year layoff, one of the first things I thought about was my old Martin Herringbone and Tony Rice and his Martin Herringbone, and those moments that we shared when I was a kid, and him being a mentor and a hero. Mm-hmm. And It was about the sound of our guitars, the beauty of the Martin guitar, the old Martins. And I remember specifically telling Maggie from the living room, listen to this old Martin guitar. The strings are 20 years old. It had the same strings on it as when I put it down back in 97.
Wow.
And I said, it sounds like a piano, doesn't it? Wow. And she agreed. And that's when I said, I've got to get this guitar in some kind of recording space, like maybe a church, right now before one of these strings break. Because they were rusted. I mean, I'm literally playing on rusted strings, 20-year-old strings.
Wow.
And that was really the what got me into the church. I put the microphone in front of the guitar, and I wanted to capture those 20-year-old strings on the old guitar that I had since I was a kid, and my return back to the guitar. And I just thought of the most beautiful thing that I could think of playing, which was out of my childhood. And one of those things was Ease with the Breeze that Tony Rice played with me on. Mm. And I just started playing, and I started playing the theme. And then I wanted to showcase the guitar. And so I started playing these other chords, and I started improvising. And I didn't know where it was going. And I just kept playing. And it turned out to be one of my favorite things I've done. Just sitting there in the church, taking the listener on this journey of the beautiful sound and tone of the old Martin, even on those 20-year-old strings.
That's great. It's great. Mark O'Connor, I'm going to say goodbye to you. I'll play for the audience of Unreal Bluegrass, Ease with the Breeze, as you've just described it. Listen, I think this album is a remarkable, remarkable effort. I love the fact that not that you had to dedicate it to Tony Rice, but that you did. We all miss Tony terribly. I think I said this to you off the air, that I think everybody who listens hard to music and pays attention, they can tell you where they were when they first heard Tony Rice's guitar. And I think that you probably feel the same way, and you're not mimicking him in the least in Markology 2, but you draw that inspiration from all the things, and it's a wonderful, wonderful collection of music. I love every cut on it. The sound we've talked about over and over is so crisp and so clean. So credit your revitalized right hand on that one, because I know that was a difficult thing for you to do. So I wish you the best, and I hope you keep playing guitar and go through your practice regimen where you can keep it up as you want to, and look forward to seeing you down the road somewhere.
Thank you so much. Thanks for listening out there. Thanks, Steve, for playing the music.
Thank you so much. I'll talk to you later. Mark Connor, this is Ease with the Breeze.